Hi, and welcome to the Dewing Grain podcast. Dewing Grain are independent and local grain traders. From seed supply to harvest movement and storage contracts, they can offer you the best strategies to achieve the highest prices for your harvest. Each week on our podcast, we begin with the market report, giving you up-to-date information and analysis, followed by the farm chat, where we catch up on agricultural issues with a guest or two. So let's start with Andrew Dewing for this week's market report. And don't forget, you can always check current market prices on the homepage of our website, dewinggrain.co.uk.
Welcome to the market report. What follows are my thoughts or gut instincts on what the market is going to do. It is not an instruction to trade. Any decision to trade is yours.
Market report for wheat commencing the 18th of March. We saw last week the wheat market had a rally on the back of basically a lack of supply, a bit of demand coming in. We saw the States pick up France, and I think that impacted onto the UK. At the end of the week, the market did start to slip back. China started to cancel a number of shipments from the US, France and Australia. It wasn't clear if they were cancellations or delays. It does seem to be that they've not completely cancelled those purchases, but they've asked for a delay in the shipment, probably on the back of the fact that they managed to get a lot of cheap wheat and corn out of, Ukraine and Russia. So they've obviously pushed those other cargoes back. And in the oilseed rape market, we saw a good rally last week on the back of a number of things. Certainly palm is under pressure. Very old trees over in Malaysia needing to be grubbed up, replanted. That's going to limit supply. We still have this issue in Europe of the change in the importation of palm, which is coming through at the end of this year, which is just adding support to that market. Although, having said that, there is still a lot of rapeseed on farm looking for homes on the old crop section. That the same is true in Europe. There's still rapeseed, old crop on farm that farmers haven't sold. So that could limit the market rise. The other thing to bear in mind is that we've seen record shorts in the funds. So they still have these incredibly enormous short positions across all commodities, oils, wheat, corn. And it'll only take a small bit of news to spook them to come in and buy it. But at the minute, that news is not coming forward. In terms of values, old crop feed wheat, you're around 158 for March. Feed barley, 132. And oilseed rape, you're about a 348. Values remain very flat at these lower levels. Always begging the question, you know, well, can they go lower? I mean, yes, they can. But obviously, they are cheap. Consumers are looking at them more. So it's a question of what's the appetite to buy at what level. In terms of new crop, again, values are very stable. November feed wheat, you're around 170. Feed barley, you're a nominal £30 under that. And oilseed rape for November, you'd probably be about 348. Weather conditions have been reasonable, certainly around Norfolk. Been a lot more activity on the drilling side, which is good to see. The soils obviously in our areas have just dried up enough to get all the machinery on, so that's fine. But having said that, there looks to be rain coming through next week and the week after, and the water table is still very, very high. So we'll see how farmers get on. I think Saturday was looking okay for weather, so it'll just be the Sunday onwards where there could be some issues. There is a bit more action, but, you know, it's still very thin on the news front, and we'll have just seen the Russian elections, and I can already predict the result for you. Yes, Putin will win, so the status quo in Russia will stay the same. The farm chat this week, it was an interesting one. Josh came back from Rome, and he was discussing all the changes over in the malting industry in terms of carbon and what the end consumer is looking at. And Andrew then had a great rant about politics, which, as ever, keeps all of us on our toes. Anyway, I hope you all had a good week. You know, let's hope this trading week brings a bit more positive news to the markets, and thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening. Please remember that any decision to trade on this opinion is yours.
Attention all farmers and consumers. It's time to chuck on the wellies and join us for our podcast walk around our beautiful Norfolk countryside. Our walks are a great way to network, share insights, and just have a good old yarn. As an added bonus, there is normally a nice pub at the end with the opportunity for a beer or coffee. To stay up to date with our upcoming walks, head over to our Instagram page or check the news section on our website so that you don't miss out. Now, let's head back to the farm chat.
Right, today I've got Ian, Ben and Josh with me, so morning gents.
Hello.
Hello.
Morning.
I woke up this morning feeling really well and full of vigour for the first time for ages.
Yeah, you bounced into the office, definitely.
I've been a little bit poorly. I missed out on Rome last week. Yeah. I think it's a good place to start, actually. Rome. When in Rome, Rodney? So, Josh, how did you get on? Talk us through what happened in Rome last week.
Yeah, so it's a multi-ingredient international conference. So you had people from all over the world talking about, obviously, what goes into beer and anything that really contains malting. And it was, I think you could probably rebrand it as a regen ag conference, to be honest.
So no one wants to talk about trading whatsoever?
There was a bit of trade, but largely it was based, I think they have one every 2 years. And 2 years ago, it was all about sustainability. But they were suggesting that a farmer has to pay for all sustainability. This year, they're now realising that the consumer ultimately will have to pay for the sustainable aspect of malting barley.
And so the point or the danger being on that, the complexity in it is there's some money, isn't there? Some money for the people who produce beer somewhere else in the world or...
Well, I think that one of the slides that was up, say the average UK pint price is £4.60, which I actually think sounds cheap, to be honest. But let's say it's £4.60. That's what they were suggesting. And out of that, of all the packaging, VAT, wages, lights, utilities, all of those costs, 3p of that goes to a farmer. So if they increased it to, say, an extra 2p, the consumer wouldn't necessarily notice, but I think it would definitely trickle down. But the thing that was the most interesting is that whilst it was all about sustainability and regen, no one really, in fact, nobody knew what that looked like, which I thought was fascinating.
Sorry, Josh, just coming back. The interesting thing there is that it's the producers of the various beers or whatever who have to reduce their carbon footprint.
And I think, realistically, in lots of instances, say if you took a maltings or if you took a company, we know of a maltings firm who have got an electric lorry, haven't they, to try and reduce their emissions. Is that just a piece of marketing or are they actually trying to do it? Now, the fact of the matter is there's going to be a lot of things they can't do. But a farmer genuinely can reduce their emissions and probably can sequestrate carbon, which by the whole system will benefit everyone down it. The people who have to benefit the most out of it has to be the farmer.
Which is what we've been saying.
Exactly.
This whole thing of don't willy-nilly sign anything over because actually you're the key part of this chain.
Massively.
And these multinational billion-dollar companies have to prove that they are not greenwashing.
Yep.
But you say that the only one who benefits from the farmer. I agree, the farmer needs to have a substantial benefit. But the end user or the end producer has a significant benefit in the whole journey. That's what they're trying to
do. Sorry, do you mean consumer?
I mean the brewer. You know, the carbon, there is a substantial benefit, but also with the benefit of the farmer. I'm not saying they're stealing benefit from one.
I think that's exactly it. One point that was quite interesting was that before, when you go into a pub, you know what you're going to drink within a spit, don't you? So, for example, I largely know I'm going to go for a Peroni because I like Peroni. Now, if Carlsberg was there and it was 100% sustainable, I'm not going to drink it. And I think that's the truth, though, isn't it? Like, if you look at the consumer point of view, everyone wants to be green, but they want to be green, but they don't want to be green to a point of where they're going to completely change their tastes yet.
But everyone's got to meet.
These big companies, like Carlsberg, they're going to have to do it. But for some instances, they're just basically, they'll send out a leaflet, goes out to a grower and say, are you ploughing? Yes, no. Are you using this fertiliser? Yes, no. And then if you basically tick the right criteria, that means that your barley is then considered regen in their head.
I don't think Baby Sham gets regen, Webby. I know that's your favourite.
But no, it was the thing that was really interesting is because no one... There's lots of really good areas and lots of... like, there's so much potential to grow in here. And from a farm point of view, you are sitting on something that is going to make a financial difference to your farm, and as well is going to improve the environment, and you will get paid well for it. But where is the value?
But also the important thing to mention, this is not suggesting selling a carbon credit at all. This is producing a lower carbon product.
This is exactly it. This is not carbon credits. Because my argument to these guys, they were talking about, what premium do you pay these people? And so a firm has gone out and said, right, we're going to take fertilizer, because fertilizer production, fertilizer choice is your biggest carbon footprint in your whole process. And we will pay for you to have a different fertilizer, which is abated or is carbon negative or whatever it is. But they're having to pay the farmer £100 to £120 a ton more per ton for their product, for their barley at the end of it. But so you've got that, which is a really big start. My argument that if a farmer could prove that his product is green or is carbon negative, then I believe that the premium initially has to be the same from a brewer to pay to a farmer, or a merchant to pay to a farmer, has to be the same cost on a per hectare basis of carbon credit. Because otherwise, if you're a farmer, you could, we're not saying could sell carbon credits, but you could sell carbon credits.
Yeah, correct. So whoever the brewer is, whatever their carbon credit exposure is, that's the value of
totally.
It, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and so I believe it should be worth more.
Maybe if I'm being, this is not every farmer's going to love this, but they don't necessarily need to give all of it away, but if they give the lion's share of it away, some margin for the brewer,
yep.
Most of the margin for the farmer. That's fair.
I would just say to that, there probably weren't any farmers at the conference.
No.
Right, so there's a whole load of people debating this issue with no farmer input whatsoever, and all of them commercially trying to think how the hell they can make as much money as they can out of it.
Well, that was the interesting thing. They had four of the biggest brewers in the US standing up on stage, and they were talking about it, and then one of them, someone in the audience said, what are you guys doing this for? Everyone knows the answer to that question. And he goes, for my children. And then anyway, so I just rolled my eyes and thought, shut up. Anyway, and then the next question someone asked, if you were able to crack the code for this and it gave you competitive advantage, would you share it? All of them just didn't respond, didn't answer. No. So the fact of the matter is that, yes, they're all doing it for their children, for the planet.
That would be, you know, the Americans call us cynical, don't they? Whereas in reality, we're slightly more honest in when we go, yeah, right, roll our eyes. The actual farmer is in the driving seat, and yet it doesn't feel like he's going to be in control of it. He's going to get what he's given. It really is going to have to be some form of farmer recognising the true value of this in any food supply chain. They need to come at the argument with some facts and figures behind them.
Totally. I think that's kind of what we've been working on. And I think that, oddly, when I go to those things like last week, we almost represent the farmers, because these consumers are so clean, so polished, they don't really know. They were suggesting that barley should be a perennial crop. So it should be cover crop barley, you know.
Nice.
Great for malting barley. But then if you ask somebody, would you rather eat a ton of malting barley or a ton of potatoes? Because everyone's saying how bad root crops are for the environment, but for people's diet and digestion and all of those things, they're the important things, they're much better. There'll be a situation where I believe you'll get a group of companies working together for a collaborative benefit.
They're going to be companies working for collaborative benefit mainly this side of the line, as opposed to if the farmer, well, we're working on getting scientific proof of what he's actually doing and what he's actually got. It's not just going to be a tick box, do you plough, don't you? Much more nuanced than that, isn't it? It needs to be a much more professional approach in the first place. How much benefit is it to a major distiller to have their scope 3 covered by really having a very genuinely good sustainable practice? And if it's like £200 a ton, the farmer needs to know that before he starts negotiating.
Well, I think the beauty of that is that there is only really 5 harvests between now and 2030, really, that any farmer's going to have or any consumer's going to have any information on. So they've missed this harvest already, unless they're already doing it. So they've got another 4 or 5 until 2030. Now, by that point, all of these companies have looked to reduce their emissions by 50%. Now, a farmer can do that instantly, but the thing is that you almost have to let these big companies almost think, oh, I'll be fine.
The kickback from the big companies is they are always going to want all the money. The reality is they will have enough power to bully the government to say, right, no, that's sustainable, tick. Look at us, look at the UK, we're meeting our targets because we're not producing anything anymore. We import everything and all the carbon counts against something else. In other words, this particular subject is going to be subject to exactly the same powerful people, friends of government, who are going to be able to keep that money. Then they're going to be able to cheat the system, not just, do they plough? No. It's like the McCain's regen potato that's on the telly at the moment. You have to be having a laugh.
I'm less sceptical of that. I think there's a lot of people coming into this area that will make it less like that. Farms will start having, people, every company will start having a carbon tax. There is a something I learned about last week, which is CSRD, which essentially is corporate governance on carbon emissions. So everyone essentially be audited on how much carbon they emit, and you won't be able to fluff that.
That's good news on the Webby Bike to Work scheme.
Look, it's a heavy subject that's really complicated, I know. But the beauty is that I believe that farmers hold, like, they've got something in their hand that's really a tangible thing.
Yeah, we got to help them, haven't we?
So 100%, right. Yeah. But the good thing is, if these massive companies don't know what they're doing, then that's great. Because that means there's still grey area and there's a lot of place to learn. And you're not behind the curve necessarily if you haven't done too much yet.
No, okay. So what else? I mean, the thing I missed, I called off Rome because, as I say, I was poorly, which is I wanted to meet up with Daggy and Stuart Shand and have one of those lunches where you drink too much beer and talk complete rubbish and other old boy type things. I missed out on the general kind of Mickey taking of, you know, Jonathan Hoyland and guys like, you know, just a little bit of fun that you have in the bar late at night. And then the serious stuff, you know, for the youngsters with the greased back hair.
It was a good week. Everyone was on quite good form. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, Rome is a good place to go, isn't it? I think that some people probably enjoyed it more than others. It was a good conference. Yeah, everyone was in good form. I think everyone mixed with everyone. There wasn't little cliques, so it was positive.
Okay. I mean, we can all see this in front of our face, but conversations about drilling and planted air, and what was the European sentiment? Because you must have rubbed shoulders with some Frenchies or some Germans or whatever.
It is. I mean, it isn't bullish, because one of the facts is that because of the hangover of 21, there is a 2.5 million ton surplus of malting barley. So that is already, you need to have a really, really another grap year for it to get eaten into. 22. No, 21 from like COVID. So we've already got that situation. But it is the 13th of March, and as we're recording this, and there is very little malting barley drilled. If you take UK, what, 6 months ago, less than that, 5 weeks ago, there was a massive deficit.
Realise your dad's is circling his day, but it's the 14th.
It's the 14th of March. Yeah. There was a huge deficit of spring malting barley seed. Now you're looking at a huge surplus because people can't drill it.
And then go back to the original thing, on the continent, French and German.
Same story. Exactly the same story.
I mean, technically they're probably behind, because wouldn't they be ahead of us?
Yeah, they would. They're behind. The Germans were slightly concerned about it, but then they're quite fun anyway.
When you say slightly, I mean the week, it's ticked on another week. Well, I mean, it's...
They didn't give me figures, but they're in the same position as us. Yeah. And they are, everyone is, it's just not going in, is it? There is a situation where everyone thought there was bug all seed, and now there's more of it.
Farmers are farmers, they will find a way of getting in, though, I'm sure. But it's
yeah,
just
they will, the but then dates, to what point dates. Do you go, right, yield is lost by half a ton of hectare, or a ton of hectare, or, and not only that, we've seen no end of barley that's drilled, because obviously we're in a low nitrogen area, where we are. The later it drilled, the higher nitrogen it tends to be. So will it be a high nitrogen yield? And lower yield.
I'm very impressed, stroke shocked, but I think you've learned quite a lot from your trip to Rome.
Yeah. I don't know who taught me that, really.
Right, let's get into some more general conversation about the world at the moment. Having been a bit of a daze for a week...
You weren't that bad.
I was completely out with the... I was like an out-of-body experience, completely lost I was. Anyway, so here I am.
I always get nervous when you say, right, let's talk about the world.
Right, I woke up this morning and the radio came on, and on the radio, the first piece of news was about... men's faces wincing. Was a story about the Tory donor. Again, this is the third, fourth, fifth day on the trot we've had this story. And at what point is a politician allowed to say... on behalf of the Tories, we're not going to give the money back. The guy made the wrong statement in a private place 5 years ago. He's made a fulsome apology, tried to approach the lady to say, I'm very, very sorry about that. Very poor choice of words. Someone's reported back on something in a private meeting, and the whole journalists are jumping up and down about a piece of conversation from 4 or 5 years ago. Completely wrong on several levels, and there's no two ways. Once you mention a different colour of skin or something, or ethnicity, it is racist because you use the words. You aren't allowed to use words like black because you are instantly racist just by saying it. But someone just needs to say, look, we're not going to give it back. He's fully apologised. That's it. Journalists, stop asking the question. This is a waste of everybody's time, and everybody's really bored with journalism that keeps repeating, trying to get some sort of soundbite that sounds a bit more exciting than the last. This is the position. Forget it. let's talk about something grown up and serious. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do, yeah. I mean, the other avenue that the Tories could go down and say, look, yeah, we're not giving the money back, but guess what? You know, we're going to use this donation to do good. You know, here's 10 million quid, we'll help to further the cause of...
Nah, bollocks to that. What they need to say is, look, it's like, no, I'm going to use it to fight the next election because we want to win and get back in power. We'll do anything, as we know, we'll do anything. We'll go back on our word, we'll bring Boris Johnson back, we'll swallow any piece of poo just to get in power. We don't care, we're going to go back on gas, everything is U-turn on it. We'll lie, we'll do whatever we can. We're getting back in power, we're going to use 10 million quid for it. That's the truth. Fact. Take it on the chin.
Yes, that is the truth.
Would you be more likely to vote for someone who said that than the rubbish they're coming out with? And as for the Labour Party, let's be critical. Why are they dwelling on it?
I know, yeah.
Just say, look, I appreciate you're not going to give them... Because score the point. I appreciate, you know, you're fundamentally, morally flawed on every level and you're going to keep the money and it's pathetic. Like, the, you know, you are pathetic. So, you know, carry on. We all just another chalk mark of your sleaze. Move on to the next thing. Yeah?
Okay.
I mean... Diane Abbott is the conversation. I find Diane Abbott annoying. But I find Keir Starmer annoying. I find Rishi Sunak annoying.
How long is this list going to be?
Well, my point being that, you know, how many politicians are there that you don't find annoying? Name a really good politician in the modern world.
David Davis. I like him.
Isn't he the one who was Mr. Euro, let's get out of Europe? Is that that?
Yeah,
that?
He was, but he was still...
Has he apologised yet?
Not morally bankrupt. Oh, God, okay.
Are you prepared to mention the name you came out with in the office this morning? I was shocked.
I used her name. I said,
I'm still not sure it wasn't a slip of the tongue and you got it wrong. But
I said, you have a whole lot of people who do not stand up and say out loud, this is what
she says it out loud. I'm just giving away who it is.
Angela Rayner. I said, the thing about her is she is completely authentic in the sense that she was... dragged up, poor bugger. I listened to a podcast about it. She's genuinely got there through a series of events.
She's pretty gritty and direct.
If you ended up in a street fight with her, I wouldn't fancy your chances.
Totally agree with everything she says, but she says it, didn't she?
It's not about agreeing with people. It's about authenticity. What they say on the they hate posh southern blokes, or you know, they hate posh southern types. Josh wants
a I'm surprised you don't fancy her, Webby. Compared to some of the birds you fancy, she's not that bad.
Come on. We're being misogynistic.
That's a good point, Webby, actually. I mean, at least her eyes don't cross and she's relatively quite thin.
Oh, blimey.
Ben hasn't mentioned his mate Penny recently, has he?
He hasn't, no.
Yeah. She's actually, in fairness,
she's good at holding that cross up in front of the king.
My mate Penny, who, she becomes... PM, I will go for beers with her again, like we did.
Oh, of course you will.
Back in the day. But to be fair to Penny Mordaunt, in that whole Liz Truss chaos, Penny Mordaunt turned down her severance pay. No matter how long you're in cabinet for in a role, you are given a severance pay. She was in the job for 2 days. The rest of them took it. They all went, yeah, I'll take that. Penny Mordaunt said, no, I'm not accepting that. So I think she is going to run for leader of the Tories, definitely.
Well, she won't get it, will she?
I think she might.
No, she's not right-wing enough. They're going to split down the middle, aren't they? They're going to be the ones with the armbands marching down the street.
Is this all going to be politics now?
It is very hot on the radio, isn't it? And if only the debate was grown up about real issues, not about a Tory donor or of some Labour guy who's rubbish. It doesn't really matter, does it? That's not what's important.
No.
And the journalists are obsessed with getting people... We're here to talk about... you know, unemployment in the north or something. The Tories are going to bring back Boris Johnson for the Red Wall. I mean, not being funny, Rishi Sunak is openly selling his soul to the devil. Is he not? Is he not completely bearing himself as being completely morally corrupt?
Yesterday there was a sort of a side headline on the BBC, which is where a lot of the stuff's coming from, which says 1 in 5 UK adults are not looking for work.
Well, what do you do about that? If you're Prime Minister, Josh... Mm.
I'm not going to say what I'd do about that.
No, go on, say. What would you do? You're right.
I mean, look, there's all these people kicking up, moaning about people coming over to the country and taking jobs and doing whatever they do. If there's 1 in 5 people in the UK not looking for work when there are jobs available, that's just annoying.
But that is a good point, Josh, because the Tory party budget is based on growth. And as someone pointed out, that growth comes from... immigrant labour.
Yeah.
It doesn't come from people in the UK. So you do have to have immigration.
It goes right back to fair education for all. Investment in people so their attitudes are different to what they are right now. There is no investment at the grass level for people who haven't got bucket loads of money to educate their kids.
Yeah.
Right? So there's all these kids mucking in. Right? If you're in a rural community, you're probably better off than if you're in a city, because a little less violence, a little less, you know, cultural differences, etc. It is a total bottom-up, start investing massively at that level and try and educate people about working. Try and educate people about and give them opportunities not to be computer bloody programmers. Make them carpenters, make them plumbers. Yeah. Let's give people genuine opportunity to do stuff, which is going to cost, you know, millions and billions and billions of pounds. No one's going to do it. But we culturally are screwed, aren't we? We all know of kids who you wouldn't employ.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't employ them because they've got no clue about actually turning up on time, having a conscience and doing the job properly and not being a victim. And that's not me being overly ridiculously overstated.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. You are probably right, I must admit. I think there's a lot of, like...
Noted. Keep that one in. Like, editing
team. A lot of self-entitled people that just aren't willing to do it because they don't think they need to.
Is it self-entitled or is it just completely unaware? Complete and utter brain deadness about what's actually going on. You know, you wake up in the morning and it's not fair. And I'm going to eat some Cheerios about 10 o'clock and then I'll play games till whatever time. Then I'll go and collect my money and pretend I'm looking for a job. And if I got a job, it'd be shit, wouldn't it? I'd hate it. It's not their fault.
It goes down to work or want, doesn't it?
It isn't their fault. If you train a dog to bite the postman, he'll bite the postman. If you train a dog not to, it won't, right? So it's no.
So what do you think we should do?
I think that it needs to, grassroots is like, you've got to just completely change the attitude of people. Everyone is so unbelievably selfish now. Everyone is, there's no community spirit. You know, there is in certain, you know, old people picking litter up in their green, but we're talking about kids having first thought other people. Stoicism in blokes.
I'll tell you what we need, a good war.
I'll tell you who's doing something. Vince's son. So that's good, isn't it? He's doing good for the community on his GoFundMe page.
Yeah.
So I think we're just, there are pockets of good, definitely.
What's he doing?
He's raising money for cancer charities.
Is that GoFundMe page? Is it for cancer charities? Or is it for getting, like, things happening in the community?
Cancer and the community, well, I think.
Yeah, I mean, how old is he? What, 19, 18? Yeah. Okay, so you're right. Yeah, there's a good example. But Vince is a, you know, very, very hard-working. Vince is our accountant, everybody. He's been on the podcast. He's classically understands the dynamic of work and would have drummed into his kids, wouldn't he? But we're talking about people who haven't got that strength in their parents.
I'll tell you what, who's to blame? The generation of the parents above me, really.
Is that the boomers? No, that's Webby, isn't it?
That's a little shot at the brilliant parenting that lad's just enjoyed.
So have you now referred to me as a boomer?
No, you keep telling me I'm a millennial. You are a millennial. Oddly, people are not picking on millennials as much. So what's the next one? Generation Z or something?
Yeah. Definition of a millennial.
Oh,
a millennial is anyone who started employment post 2008.
Yeah, well, that's not how it works,
attitudes,
is it? it's when you were born.
Attitudes change.
You were born like in a millennial period of time.
I've never known someone hate the term millennial as much as you. It really gets to you, doesn't it?
Back to the boomer. entitled. And
this podcast come direction I never thought it would go into. This is
kind of... All right, let's go on to some more traditional territory. Right, it is definitely Biden-Trump, which we already knew. Mm-hmm. And there was a little soundbite of Trump saying, Joe, I've done more in 47 months than you've done in 47 years. The two of them are just going to have this kind of slug it out, ridiculous.
Who can remember the most and not fluff their words? But, okay, so let's come back onto other subjects. One thing I have been picking up, which I know it's not, you know, but one thing to keep an eye on, Ukraine have hit a huge amount of oil refineries in Russia.
Today?
Over the last 3 days. Okay. And it is starting to have an impact. Russia has said they won't export oil, and oil prices are being pushed up. And you just wonder how far this can go. Because if you think about an oil refinery, it is pretty easy to hit. You can hit it with a lock, it's big and it can't, you know, it's just there.
Yeah, absolutely. In the meantime, Russia's gaining ground in Ukraine.
They are gaining ground, yeah.
And
every day comes closer to a Trump win.
Which is going to help, you know, our man Vladimir when he finally gets in again, isn't it? But at this moment, where do we stand on who wins that between us?
Well, hang on, wins what?
The presidential election.
It's Trump.
I'm not convinced.
Unless he's cool, I can't even say what I was going to say, but anyway.
I think there's enough Americans with some semblance of reality who are going to say, we can't go through that again. It was such a car crash.
But I also don't think they're overly, like, they're not overwhelmed by what Biden's done.
Joe
it's Biden. Been a bit of a lame period, hasn't it?
Joe Biden is just as bad.
They were critical of Obama post his period. Like, Biden's, yeah, it's not all for bad.
Biden has achieved a number of things quietly. The one good thing he's good at is negotiating deals in Congress.
But the thing about the Americans, and this is criticism that all Americans hate, but they're not quiet, though, are they? They're big, brash, they're like Donald Trump. That's why he appeals.
That's a bit of a sweeping statement for 270 million people. No, there's some really quiet, nice ones, too.
No, I get it.
They'll be voting just the same as the loudmouth, you know, cap-wearing types, which suits Donald down to the ground. But there is some thinking going on, I think.
I'm not saying condoning Trump, but he had a very good, they had a very good period on Wall Street, didn't they? There was no significant wars. He did genuinely go over to North Korea and look for peace. Like, Joe Biden, not being funny, what a wet lettuce. He's too old.
Donald stepped over the line and walked into North Korea holding Kim Jong-un's hand. And that just shows a complete lack of understanding of what that guy does to his people. That's Donald almost condoning the guy for being a mercenary, nasty git. Who's lots of people are starving in his country. Messages are important for major, you know, the rest of us, the West, if you like, to say, look, that is inappropriate.
I would say that obviously every day that Donald was in power, every morning he'd wake up and on X or Twitter would be some kind of bombshell announcement, which just sent the markets all over the place.
Knee jerk. Here is the golden hospital pass of all hospital passes. Who is going to be his running mate?
Trump's.
Yeah. Mike Pence.
No, it can't.
No. Mike Pence was a serious politician who had 4 years of utter misery. Whoever you are, you're going to get slaughtered by the guy because he always stabs everybody in the back in the end. Whoever is moronic enough to take that job, who's it going to be? Political suicide. Firstly, they'll never be president, whoever they are. You think about it, it'll be very interesting to see who he...
Well, actually, the vice president to Donald Trump's irrelevant, isn't it? Because it's the Donald Trump show.
So long as someone's prepared to fall on their sword and be vice president and he's knowing they're going to get trashed.
Yeah.
Mind-boggling. When do you think our election will be in the UK?
First week of November.
What's the latest it can possibly be? January, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it'll be January. Lastminute.com, hoping that something good is happening. Maybe just before Christmas when everyone's feeling Christmassy. You're right, it could be the autumn.
He's going to need to push it back as late as possible to try and win as many favours in the short term.
The probability is he's not going to win. He's going to expand the amount of time he's Prime Minister by as many days as he possibly can. Yeah. I think.
Agree.
And at this moment, there's no way they're going to win, is there?
No, I can't see it.
Unless people just can't be bothered to turn up and vote. And in all the rural communities, there's 17 people voting and they're all blue rinse grannies.
I certainly don't personally believe that we'd be any better with a Labour government.
We would be better in the sense there needs to be a broom going through the cabinet and a complete fresh set of eyes on a number of things. They're stuck in some ways. They've got some extreme people in their party who are very, very much in power and Rishi can't move on it. Equally, when Labour gets their feet under the table, there'll be a lobby from their side that will also put pressure on them. But I do think you are going to have some sort of proper clean out. But hey, anyway, so here we sit. The weather forecast that was yellow, sun in the sky, blue skies, everything working.
Sun is shining.
Today. Now. Yeah, today. But the forecast that we had that was good for March has turned into wet, hasn't it? And all right, there's been some jobs done, but we are in a little concerned state now, aren't we? Norfolk is better than most for getting on quickly when it dries out a minute amount. But yesterday, there was enough rain to stop everybody for at least two days.
I would say that the Saturday, when we had one lovely day, which probably was for the rest of the country, there were drills out. And actually, the land looked really, like, not completely. And then a morning's worth of a few mil, and it looked like shite again. But there will be catchy days, so I'm not giving up hope yet.
Are all the beat out now? Is everyone
It's a lot of beet, I think.
Well, yeah, but have they closed the factory?
I heard yesterday they're going to mid-April.
Blimey. Mm. That is unbelievable. Mm. Okay, so there's still sugar beet out there, yep. Still the odd field of potatoes.
There's potatoes, yeah.
Which is going to be whatever the SFI thing is going to be, NUM3, isn't it? They're going to put in legume break for 12 months, which will fulfil the hole that oilseed rape normally takes. And, you know, so SFI will be taken up and the government can prove how really good at carbon saving they are by all the uptake and how generous they are in their giving money away. Rishi's been to the NFU conference. How wonderful. Yeah, good. So there will be a lot less product next year to trade.
The interesting thing about the SFI, as it's a massive debate at the moment, we're all having so many conversations about it, I'm not convinced the uptake's going to be anywhere near as big as what I first thought.
What, this year or next year?
Generally.
Well, if it keeps wet, it's going to go...
Yes, this year, because of the wet, maybe, and I don't fully understand the whole system, but lots of people are talking about seed costs, wild bird mix, 800 quid a hectare.
Yeah, opportunity makes a thing.
But, you know, the 300 quid, someone said to me, 300 quid's worth of seed, you know, establishment costs are 500 quid. Okay, yes, it's good year two, but... And then dealing with volunteers and everything beyond that. So I don't think the uptake's going to be...
That's only because the seed guys are ripping everybody off, aren't they?
Sorry?
Opportunity makes the thief. The seed guys are ripping everybody off. Yeah. It's a crazy...
Though Josh came out with an interesting point, is that some of the seed houses have loaded up with various seed that they haven't necessarily been able to sell because it's moving so much.
Okay.
And so there's a lot of wastage in seed, potentially. I think it's interesting how it's all evolving.
Well, I mean, actually, on the sort of seed thing, I think there's another big purchase via Boston Seeds have been bought by Frontier. Which is, so that's another small seeds, which is SFI, which is all of that. In fairness, they had a very good online business, which I think did a lot of households in the UK. They're just another company that's been bought up. So there's going to be a tighter seed supply for people, less people to buy from.
Well, so Frontier's still got the checkbook out then. 20 mil, that's the most recent.
Only?
Well, only 20. I'm being generous, discount.
20 mil's Webby's house bill.
Now, so just...
Well, as in running costs.
As we've got Ben with the mic again... Oilseed rape, well, because I'll have to do the market report, or one of us is going to do the market report this week. I've got an international conference coming up this weekend with some very big players.
Some heavy hitters.
Yeah, in Biarritz. And, so oilseed rape's gone up, Ben. This is a bit of a shock news moment last bit.
Yeah, shock news rally. I mean, it was very, very low.
Mm-hmm.
We've got farmers in Canada saying, well, rapeseed is, you know, it's too, canola's too cheap. So we're going to reduce our planting intentions. The Brazilian soya crop is down and going down, although they are finishing it now. And I accept that Argentina could have a massive crop and there's more coming on stream. But I think, you know, oil seed crops in general are under the cosh. Palm in Malaysia, all their trees are getting older and older. And actually, at the end of this year, Europe have got their new legislation coming in, reducing the use of palm. Why? Because people have got... annoyed with all this greenwashing. This, oh, my palm's from a sustainable source. No, it bloody isn't.
Yeah. The rate price at this point
for April, you're 350.
Which was a target, wasn't it?
Yeah, 30 quid off the low. Inevitable question, has it got more upside? Yes, it has, but there will be down days between now and then. And let's not forget the new crop rapeseed coming in is we're going to have a tiny crop. We're going to be importing at least 1 million, if not more.
In saying that, I've got to say there's a few crops on the way into work, not that I travel more than 5.8 miles into work, that look really good. I mean, it's coming into flower, isn't it?
Yeah, they do look good.
I pass that same one. I agree. It looks awesome. Really good.
Yeah.
That not everyone's got those. There are some howlers as well.
Well, I saw one on the podcast walk, didn't we? We took a picture of it. But no, there's a crop that's, you know, coming into flower and full cover, and the pigeons can't find a spot. A
couple of warm days, and I think it will be there, yeah.
Yeah, so, hey, oilseed rape, the crop you shouldn't be growing. But with that, I think we've...
P45 for me, then.
That's the job with it. There's a broom and that outside, isn't there? I need a lift to the airport. You can perhaps drive me, stuff like that. No, with that, we've touched the dangerous subject of politics, which always makes Ben nervous. Thanks for listening. I think that was a reasonable chat about the state of the nation. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you subscribe to get updates on new episodes and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are @DewingGrain. Alternatively, you can call us on 01263 731 550 or email info@dewinggrain.co.uk.